Hello, everyone. My name is Cheryl, and I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I probably don't even need the mic. I'm loud. I'm Irish. I'm half Irish and half Italian. Deadly combination. My father told me at a young age that that meant when I come to a puddle, I don't know whether to swim in it or drink out of it. I love my father. My father was one of my heroes in life, and he died young. He died at 55 from cancer. I was sober in my first year, and my sponsor died 3 months, 2 months later, and I didn't pick up a drink one day at a time. Because I was told and taught from the day I got in here, from the old timers, the ones before me, this is a simple program. Nothing gets you drunk but booze. And if you don't pick up the first one, it's impossible to get drunk. And thank God this simple mind could take the simplicity of that and jump in a car. Now, there's a lot of things I had to do. I had to take the suggestions of Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. I jumped in the car, and I went to meetings, 2 meetings a day for 2 years. And I had 4 little kids, they were just 8, 7, 5, and 3 when I got here. I had every excuse in the book not to come. I had every fear, doubt, and insecurity. I had nothing. I was on welfare. I had no money. And a car that wasn't running because it needed a $40 part. And life wasn't shining on me. I was going through a divorce, and things weren't good when I got here. Now I'll start from the beginning, and I'm going to do a fast version because we've got about 20 minutes. We're going to break at 9. And I can talk real fast, and I never know what I'm going to say up here, but, you know, I've told my story a million times, and this is a million and one. And when I come to the podium, it's an honor to be here to help you celebrate your anniversary. It really is, but any time I have ever spoken from a podium, especially from the podium, I tell my story, where I came from, what happened, and how it is today. And I tell it for me, because when I get to the part of when I got sober, it's a whole different person than that stands here today. A whole different person of the mind, of a sober mind, compared to the alcoholic mind that walked in these doors. First, I'd like to congratulate the group on 42 years. That is quite the accomplishment. It really is. You really deserve a hand. The food, the effort, you know, there's no coffee fairy. You know, somebody has to come in here and set up a meeting and do all that. And, I did all that. And I stayed sober because I got a job. You know, I was a coffee maker for 6 years at one time. And did things. And I'd like to congratulate those who got their coins here, especially the new person, everybody, but especially that 24-hour coin. God, I remember that. My very first meeting, I had throw up on my chest. I had been in the same clothes on a drunk for 2 days, and I slept in them, and I went to my very first meeting, and they went around the table, and I cried the whole meeting. It was a main and room time discussion. And I won the book, surprise. And that was the first time I said I was an alcoholic. And they passed me the book, and they gave me a 24-hour coin. And I'll tell you something. I held that 24-hour coin, I'll never forget, I was thinking of the other day, in my hand. I had to go to the grocery store that night, and I was still in those clothes. And I was shaking, and I went into the grocery store, and I held that coin so tight in my hand because I didn't want to see anybody in town. By this point, I was just the worst person in the world. And we all know, you know, I amplified everything in my head. My head was not a good place to be. And I held that coin, and I kept my head down, and I picked up a few things. And when I got home, I had the intention of that coin in my hand. I was so scared. If you're new in here, you know, nothing I can say is going to get you sober. But if you go to a meeting, you ask for help, you join a group, you get a sponsor, you take the suggestions, just let somebody know you're new, you're really new. And you can come along with us. Jack the Barber used to say, come along with us and we'll make it together. And you know, that's all it's about. I don't get anybody sober. I'm God's taxi cab. I throw you in the car. I've thrown many, many in the car, and many of me, and I've thrown many in the car, and I've been to their wakes. I had a girl, poor girl, You know, I went up, somebody said she wasn't breathing, I went to her apartment and she was blue. And I rolled her over and she came to and she looked at me and she said, "I'd rather see the devil." Let's go, honey. She didn't want to see me because she knew she was going to detox and she still must have had some shit in her pillow. And, you know, she went into detox. She called me when she was getting out and she says, "I'll see you at the noon time." And I said, "Why don't you get in the car with me tonight?" And she says, "No, I like your noontime meetings." And I says, "Okay." I said, "I'll catch up with you soon. Give me a call." You know, a week later, they found me dead. And that's the reality of where drugs and alcohol will take you if you're an alcoholic and a drug addict. Okay. Now I can do this in 15 minutes. You ready? We got through the Irish-Italian part. I grew up with the oldest girl. There were five of us. My brother was the oldest. The oldest girls, I have three other younger sisters. And my brother was a hellion, an absolute hellion. He made me look good. I mean, I loved the fact that he was a messed up kid. He made me look good. I could do anything. I could do anything, and the attention was always on him. So he made me look good. I grew up in a good household. My father was an engineer for the state. And my mother was an at-home mother and raised us five kids. And they drank every single day. My father went to work, came home, and he had GIQs and Narragansetts, if you remember what those were. And they come in about 24 bucks. And after supper, he'd crack one and he'd drink a GIQ at night. And he'd watch a few shows and he'd sit in his recliner and my mother would sit in hers. And they'd call each other arseholes all night. That's what you do in London. And they loved each other. They stayed there together 35 years before we met, you know. And, you know, and we were a family. We did vacations and we didn't go without. We weren't rich, but we had everything you could ask for, a nice home. And we had ski-doos and a swimming pool. And I would ski in and I did all the things kids that get a chance to do. And I did them. And I had a ball. Somewhere around 12 or 13, I want to say, is when my drinking started on the weekends. Before that, at 9 or 11, I think my cousin told me at 11, I was 11 when I drank down a bottle of tequila and a Puerto Rican rum. That's what it was called, Puerto Rican rum. And I guzzled it down. I got into a cabinet. I was showing off, and I nearly died. I nearly died. And you know what? I remember throwing my guts up, and everything went white, and I remember being on my knees. I was 11 years old at my aunt's house, and I remember praying to God and saying, "Jesus, help me, don't let me die." And I knew it was wrong. I knew it was wrong. And I said, you know, I felt guilty. I got caught, and I felt sick, and I said, "I'll never do this again." And by 13 years old, I was drinking on weekends. And it was to fit in. It was to be a part of. My friends drank, and we had a ball. If you didn't have a ball with your drinking, you pretty much got screwed. I had a ball. I had a blast in the younger years. By the time I was 18 and graduating from high school, I was pretty much lost. I was obsessed with drinking. This is a disease, and it's threefold, and I've learned this in here. Anything I tell you is what I learned in here. I don't have any original thoughts about alcoholism or anything. The only thing original about me is me. You know, I am who I am. I come from where I come from. And this is what you get, you know, the good, bad, and the ugly. And I the only thing I do know is that by the time I was 18, I was obsessed mentally with drinking. If I wasn't drinking, I was always thinking of drinking. My friends were going off to college. They were doing things. My father was asking, "What was I going to do?" I said, "I think I'll go to hairdressing school." My father bought me a head and a kit and took the cigar out of his mouth. My father was he looked like Muhammad Ali, and he smoked little stogies, and he yelled like Gomer Pyle, the captain there. And he said to me, "This head cost me $1,200, and you better not be out drinking. You better go to school," and blah, blah, blah. And I said, I am. And I went to night school, and but the problem was, by that time, it was more important for me to be at the Knights of Columbus drinking with my friends. It was more important for me to be at the carpet club because I was 18 and drinking at 18. And it was 2-for-1 on Tuesdays. It was ladies' night on Thursdays. And those things won out. So I would get to school and I'd either pull in or pull out. I put some hours in, but to make a long story short, by the end, I had that head on the bar. It was drinking with us. My friend Bucky Crosman drilled a hole in his mouth and gave it a butt. We named it Mrs. Johnson. I woke up one morning, my father said, I hear that head's drinking at the Knights of Columbus. Yeah, we have a few after class. He said, if you're going to continue, you're going to pay for it. And he says, and I got news for you. You better have something to believe in, little girl. Because by this time, I was 18 and I'd already had 2 or 3 cars. As a matter of fact, my own cousin, he's sitting out here, his family owns our car insurance. And when I went in to insure my third car, his father looked at me and said, I wouldn't insure you a horse and buggy. And out I went. My father said, you're going to pay for it. And I worked in a nursing home, I worked in the kitchen, and I made enough money to pay my car payments and to drink. And that's all I was interested in. So school went out the window. From 18 to 21, my drinking progressed so rapidly, and I loved to drink. I loved it, but I didn't like to look back. And it progressed so bad and so quickly that I found myself, I started drinking more. I started drinking vodka straight. I would buy a fifth of vodka, and in those days, you'd ride around, and you'd hit a bar, and you'd do this, but I always had a fifth of vodka with me, and I would drink beers, and I would chase, you know, I would drink the vodka and chase it with a beer to kill the taste. Go to the bars, drink some White Russians, whatever. I'd drink anything, you know, it didn't matter. I liked the booze. What happened was, by the time I was 20, I could see my life going nowhere fast. I was still working in this nursing home. I was losing my job, trying another job. I was holding a job. I had an apartment. The landlord was on my back. He wanted his rent. And there just wasn't enough money to pay rent. And so I knew things were going bad, so I thought, geez, you know what? Maybe I'll get married. You know, my mother and father are married. It ain't that bad. You know, maybe I'll get married. At this point, I had a boyfriend from like the 8th grade up until I was 20. And he was at college, and we dated on and off. And I decided I didn't want to marry him. So I went to the Knights of Columbus, and the bartender was a tall, lanky Irish boy, and he liked me. Word was out that he liked me, and I knew this for a long time, and I really wasn't interested. He was kind of quiet, and I really wasn't interested. But I remember sitting there. I was having a lot of trouble with booze by this time. I was having seizures. They diagnosed me with epilepsy. They put me on phenobarbital or Dilantin, and I would drink, and I would have seizures. And I would end up in the hospital a lot. And I knew that my life pretty much stuck. And I remember I was getting that sick feeling, that search for what's wrong with me about this time. And I decided that before I got married, I decided I would become a born-again Christian. And if there's any born-again Christians out there, there's nothing wrong with anything. I don't care what you believe in. But it wasn't my thing. Let me put it this way. I had married to a who had become a born-again Christian. And I called her. I called her when I was drunk at 3 in the morning when I was having one of my life sucks routines. And apparently she talked me into driving out to Athol, Mass. And if you don't know where Athol, Mass is, it's not the end of the world, but you can see the end from there. And she said to me, if you come out to Athol on Saturday, I'm going to a service, a healing service, and they can heal you. And I guess at 3 in the morning when you're parking, your life stinks. That sounds like a good idea. But I woke up the next morning, and I wasn't too happy with my decision. Like, you know, I was a people pleaser, and I said, what the hell, I was an adventurous. I packed up the Chevy with the tied-down trunk and the big dent, and, you know, I grabbed a six-pack of tall boys, and I said, I'm going to go get born again, and I got in my car. And I got halfway to Athol. I had about 3 or 4 beers, and if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict, you understand this. I was born again. I didn't have any problems. How was I making such a big deal about last night? Jesus, you know, I worry too much. All I got to do is straighten this crap out, and I'll be fine. So I got to her house, and I brought the beers in, and she said, you're drinking. I said, "Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even, you know, why would you even ask that?" She says, "Well, I don't think you should go there drinking." I said, "You know what? I probably shouldn't. Why don't I come back next week and get born again?" And she thought it was a good idea. She sent me on. I dropped her off at the church. I said, "Have a nice night." I stopped. You know, I remember driving home from Apple once, you know, and I was out of beer. I'd been on a twister. This is later on in my story. I'll just throw this one in. I was on a twister, and I ran out of gas and beer, and I stopped at a pawn shop, and I pawned it in my wedding band for a six-pack of beer that said beer and some gas. And I had all the good intentions of a drunk. I was going to go back in a couple days and get it. But then, like a drunk, I was a little ticked off. I only got $11 for it. How dare my husband get me such a cheap ring? I actually wanted to go home and ream him out. But I couldn't. I couldn't tell him I just pawned the ring. I got another one. And I did eventually tell him when we got another one. And I lost that one in a poker game, drunk while I was bartending. So that tells you what kind of drunk I was once I picked up a drink. Anyways, I went to hairdressing school. I dropped out. And I have a friend who's sober a lot of years. He calls me every year on my anniversary and he sings, "Beauty school dropout." I just celebrated 20 years of sobriety in Wednesday. Thank you. I don't take, and I tell you that in all sincerity, I don't care how anybody else feels, this is how I feel about it. I take no credit, zero. Desperation is the only reason why I came here. And the only thing that's kept me here is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and a God of my understanding, a caring and loving and forgiving God. And thank God for God, and that's always been my statement. My father brought us up Catholic, but I'll tell you, I love my father. He put us in the car to go to church, and even if I had a few beers on my breath when I was 16 or so, and I'd still get in that car, he'd just look at me and say, "Don't breathe on the priest." You know? And he used to tell me, you know, I said to him once, "Dad, why do you go to church? You know, you come home and all he did was swear." You know, I come from an Irish time, family of church, and everything was, "Mary, Mother, and Joseph, you son of a baron." And I says, "How do you go to church and then come home and swear like that?" We were having a discussion, and he looked at me. He says, "I don't go to church to save my soul." He says, "When I die, I'm going home." He says, "I go to, do you want to know why I go to church?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "I got five you a-holes." He says, "When I go to church and I come home and I read the funnies," he said, "they're just a little bit funnier." And I know what he meant. You know, I got that here in AA. When I leave an AA meeting, I feel a little bit better. I feel a little bit better about the world, and I feel a little bit better about me, and I can still beat me. I'm going to wrap this up real quick. I'm going to get sober now. March 10th of 1990, never forget your last drunk, they told me when I got here. If you don't forget your last drunk, you haven't had it. I've never forgot my last drunk. This is how I got here. On March 10th, I had gone out on, I guess, a Friday to meet a girlfriend at the Old Timers the week before St. Patty's Day. You know, I never drank any Old Timers on St. Patty's. You didn't get up to the bar and get a drink. I went out the Friday before. And I met her at lunch, and I don't remember. Now I woke up. I came out of a blackout, and I was in Littleton, Massachusetts, and I was at a gas pump. And I was sitting at this gas pump, and I came out of a blackout, and I had my car door open at the gas pump, and I had tomato juice, orange juice, chocolate milk, and I had puke on my sweatshirt. It said Worcester State Hospital. And I'm puking, and I don't know what day it is, and I got four children at home, and I'm going through a divorce, and I'm sick, and the drunks are getting worse, and I can't stop it now. Every time I say I'm not going to drink today, I'm getting up and I'm drinking. I'm drinking daily, and then I'm going on benders, and I drank daily for the last 3 months, and then I go on benders, and the guilt and the shame and the end of my drinking was horrendous. And I woke up and I looked around, there was a guy who was pumping gas and he had his two little girls in the car. And they looked like twins, they had their hair up and they were dressed. He was in a suit. And I remember looking at them, and I'm thinking, it must be Sunday, they must be going to church. And I remember thinking, God, I wish I was going to church, because I'm a good Catholic girl. When my ass is on fire, I want God. And when I'm in charge and having a good time, God can wait till I need him again. And I'm telling you, I looked at this guy, and I was so full of rage and anger at myself, and he looked at me. He gave me that look that everybody out here can look any one of you in the eye. If you're a drunk or a drug addict like me, somebody has given you that look in your life, and you understand it. What the hell are you doing that for? And you know, when I was no longer the girl who cared about what people thought and tried to hide, I was now a belligerent, I can't say the word, help me out, belligerent, thank you, drunk, who was full of hate, and the hate was on me. I came in here hating myself, and I turned and I looked at him and I said, what the F are you looking at? And I threw my chocolate milk and I cried my eyes out. I got in my car, I drove home, and I fell to my knees. And my father used to tell me, you know, Cheryl, you better believe in something, because you're going to need it. And he knew that from a very young age. He allowed me to be me, he let me go, and he used to say, you better believe in something, you're going to need it. And I did. I did. I had a caring and loving God, and I was embarrassed, and I was shameful. And on that day, I fell to my knees, and my kids were gone. Somebody cut my shoulder, and my husband looked at me. He shook his head, and he walked out. And I remember thinking, I wish I could leave him. He was so fortunate. He could just go, and I couldn't go. Everywhere I went, I had to take me. And I fell to my knees, and these were my exact words, and I'll never forget my last drunk. They were, dear God, no more. No more. And I had the tears coming down. I was on my knees by my daughter's youth bed, and I didn't say, no more. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I knew booze gave me trouble, but I didn't know what alcoholism was. I thought it was my uncle who drank and then hung himself. I didn't know that it was me. And I got off my knees, and you know, within 10 minutes, my brother-in-law, who had been sober 3 months with that 3-month glow, walked through my kitchen door. He said, how are you going? I looked at him, and I looked up at God, and I said, you gotta be shitting me. I asked for help and he sends me Danny. Danny sent me to his brother who had been sober a year, and to make a long story short, I found myself in my very first AA meeting the next morning. And now I'm going on day 3 and I'm in that outfit and I got puke on me. And you know, I told you I won the book and I got the chip. And then I got in the car, and this is how I stayed sober up until today. And this is simple, and I'm going to wrap it up. I'd like to tell you all about the wonderful things that lovely things, wonderful things. Matter of fact, I was on the internet earlier. I'm booking a trip to a cruise with my husband. He doesn't know yet. He's sleeping. I'm going to tell him when he wakes up. We're going on a cruise. Because I deserve it. Now we are, we're going. I'm so excited. He doesn't know yet. He'll be excited. Anyways, I'm going to wrap this up right now. I came here, and my brother-in-law took me to my very first meeting. And when we left there, he looked at me, and he said, what do you think? And, I'm sorry, let me tell you this. When I was in that first meeting, I looked up, and the only thing I saw was my shoes, no lie, and I was crying my eyes out. And I looked up, and I saw the steps, and I read the first step, and it said, I was powerless over alcohol. When I drink, my life becomes unmanageable. And the first honest words out of my mouth, being an alcoholic for 31 years, came out. I said, no shit. And that was my moment of truth. Now, you people have taught me and helped me keep my moment of truth, the day, the time, by attending AA. AA helps me with my thinking problem, and I get up every morning, and I've never, ever forgotten to ask God for help. It's a simple prayer. I said, dear God, help me to keep away from a drink or a drug and a cigarette. I added that to my list 12 years ago. Amazing how good you can feel and what you can accomplish after you're around here. It took 9 years of trying, but I never stopped. It was a bitch trying to quit smoking, but I kept trying. And I asked God to keep me away from a drink or a drug and to help me be the best person I can be. And when I screw up, because I'm a human being and I screw up, I try to make amends. I really do. I try not to hold on because I don't like that yucky feeling. I like to feel good today. I feel real good. I've gone over 5 minutes. I've got a cut. We've got lots of things to do, but I want to thank you for having me. Congratulations.